The War Refugee Board Report, Birth of the Auschwitz Legend. The high-level Washington commitment to the claim that Auschwitz was an extermination camp came in November 1944, after the claimed termination of the killing program, in the form of the WRB report. The claim had appeared many times in the propaganda earlier in 1944. Those stories are reviewed in Chapter 5. The issuing of the report was carried by the New York Times on November 26, 1944, page 1, and some excerpts were given. The WRB report is described as two reports, one written by, quote, two young Slovakian Jews, unquote, and the other by, a Polish major, all of whom had been inmates at Auschwitz from the spring of 1942 until the spring of 1944, when they escaped, the two Jews on April 7. There is an additional short supplement said to be written by two other young Jews who escaped on May 27, 1944, and made their way to Slovakia, under German domination until 1945, to make their report, which is said to have been received in Switzerland on August 6, 1944. The authors are completely anonymous, and this anonymity is duly apologized for, quote, whose names will not be disclosed for the time being in the interest of their own safety, unquote. Sections 1, 2 and 3 constitute the first part of the report, and Section 4 the second part. The first section is the major part of the report. It is said to have been written by a Slovakian Jew who arrived at Auschwitz on April 13, 1942, and was given a registration number, tattooed onto his left breast, in the neighborhood of 29,000. He eventually became registrar in the Birkenau Infirmary. The feature of this first section is a detailed record, for the period April 1942 to April 1944, of the transports which arrived at Auschwitz, together with the registration numbers assigned. About 55 groups of transports, sometimes more than one transport are in a group, are reported, and the, admittedly approximate registration numbers assigned to the people in each group are given. The numbers start at 27,400, and run to 189,000 in the consecutive numbering system, in which a number was not used twice. For each group the nationalities represented as well as other information is given, Jewish or Aryan, political prisoners or other, occasional names of individuals, numbers quote-unquote gassed instead of registered, etc. The WRB report, if it is approximately correct in these matters, interpreting the people gassed as either never having existed or having been sent on to another destination, is one of the few known sources of significant amounts of such information. Another is the reference set of Netherlands Red Cross reports, which is the subject of Appendix C. Almost all of this information is given by the author of the first section of the WRB report, but after he escaped, the authors of the third, supplemental section of the report kept an account of this information for the period April 7 to May 27, and have contributed it to the report. The second section of the report is said to be written by a Slovakian Jew who arrived at the Lublin camp around June 4, 1942, but was sent to Auschwitz around June 30, 1942. According to the first section of the report, he then would have received a registration number around 44,000, which was tattooed onto his left forearm. The tattooing system had changed. The two authors of the first two sections of the report are the two young Slovakian Jews who escaped together on April 7, 1944. The third section of the report is the short supplement, and the fourth section is the contribution of the quote-unquote Polish major. The anonymity of the authors of the report is certainly a vulnerable feature, but the major implausibility is simply the contents of the WRB report. Examination shows that the information given in the report, which is most likely true to semi-true, is the sort of thing that could have been built up from intelligence data, not from reports of, quote, two young Slovakian Jews and a Polish major who escaped, unquote. This is exactly as one should expect. Germany's enemies had certain means of gathering information about German camps and about events in Europe, and simply used information gathered by such conventional methods, plus a considerable amount of invention, to compose the WRB report. It is just not believable that intelligence agencies were in such a primitive position with respect to, of all things, the industrial center Auschwitz, that they were obliged to depend for information on miraculous escapes by unusually well-informed prisoners. This point will be amplified below. Of course, such an observation does not rule out the possible use of reports of former employees or inmates, escaped or otherwise, as part of the data. The report presents the following information, or estimates, or guesses, or claims, or inventions. 1. The number of prisoners at Auschwitz 1 in the month of April 1942, the predominant nationalities present, and the main causes of internment. Description of the inmate registration number system and the star system of inmate insignia. A list of various factories in the area, part 1, 1-2. 2. An accurate map of the area, comparable to our figure 5, part 1, 4. 3. Dimensions related to the Auschwitz 1 camp size, its fences and its guard towers. Ditto for Birkenau. Description of Barracks, Part 1, 5-7. 4. In the case of a natural death of a prisoner, a death certificate was made out and sent to Oranienburg Central Camp Administration. If the inmate was gassed, his name was entered in a special register and marked SB, Sonderbehandlung, Special Treatment Part 1, 9. 5. Four buildings, referred to as crematories 1, 2, 3, and 4, were in use in spring 1944 at Birkenau. Use of at least one of them had started in February 1943. Each building contained, A, a furnace room of ovens, B, a large hall, C, a gas chamber. The first two buildings each contained 36 muffles, and the other two 18 each. Three bodies are put in one muffle at a time, and the burning took an hour and a half. Thus, one could dispose of 6,000 bodies per day. This was considered, at the time, an improvement over burning in trenches, the method previously employed. Part 1, 14-15. 6. The specific product used for generating the gas for the gas chamber was a powder called Cyclon, manufactured by a Hamburg concern. When exposed, it released cyanide gas, and about 3 minutes were required to kill everybody in the gas chamber. The containers for the Cyclon were marked, for use against vermin, Part 1, 16. 7. Prominent people from Berlin attended the inauguration of the first crematory in March 1943. The quote-unquote program consisted in the gassing and burning of 8,000 Krakow Jews. The guests, no names given, were extremely satisfied with the results, Part 1, 16. 8. A detailed breakdown of the numbers and classifications of the inmates at Birkenau in April 1944, Part 1, 23-24. 9. In the camp, each block has a block eldest who, quote, has power of life and death, unquote. Until February 1944, nearly 50% of the block eldests were Jews, but this was stopped by order of Berlin. Under the block eldest is the block recorder, who does all the clerical work. If the recorder has noted down a death by mistake, as often occurs, the discrepancy is corrected by killing the bearer of the corresponding number. Corrections are not admitted. Part 1, 25. 10. A passage strikingly similar to the November 1942 crumpled Testament of Despair, quote, we worked in the huge Buna plant, to which we were herded every morning about 3 a.m. As our working place was situated outside the large chain of sentry posts, it was divided into small sectors of 10 by 10 meters, each guarded by an SS man. Whoever stepped outside these squares during working hours, was immediately shot without warning for having attempted to escape. Very few could bear the strain, and although escape seemed hopeless, attempts were made every day. Part 1, 30. 11. A, quote, careful estimate of the numbers of Jews gassed in Birkenau between April 1942 and April 1944, unquote, summarized in a tabular form. The numbers showed up in the published record of the IMT trial and are presented here as Figure 25, Part 1, 33. 12. Great excitement prevailed as a consequence of the escape of the two young Slovakian Jews. This is supposedly written by the authors of the supplementary section 3, and the friends and superiors of the two escapees were closely questioned. Because the two had held posts as block recorders, all Jews exercising such functions were removed for punishment and as a precautionary measure. This, of course, contradicts the implication of the foreword of the WRB report, that the Germans did not know the identity or even registration numbers of the two escapees, because it withholds such information, quote, in the interest of their own safety, unquote, Part 1, 34. 13. Starting May 15, 1944, Hungarian Jews started arriving at Birkenau at the rate of about 15,000 per day. 90% were killed immediately and, because this exceeded the capacity of the ovens, the method of burning in trenches, which had existed earlier, was reverted to. The 10% who were not killed were also not registered at Birkenau but sent eventually to camps in Germany, Buchenwald, Mauthausen, Grossrosen, Gusen, Flossenbürg, Sachsenhausen, etc. Part 1, 36-37. 14. A new inmate registration number system was also put into effect in the middle of May 1944. At about the same time, a visit by Himmler to nearby Krakow was reported in the Silesian newspapers. These newspaper reports apparently omitted to mention, however, that on this trip, Himmler had also visited Birkenau, and that his party made a special visit to Crematory 1. Part 1, 37-38. 15. In the late summer of 1943, a commission of four distinguished Dutch Jews had visited Auschwitz for the purpose of inspecting the condition of the Dutch Jews, who were then specially prepared by the Germans with new clothes, better food, etc. The commission saw only a part of the Dutch Jews sent to Auschwitz but were told that the others were in similar camps. The commission was satisfied with this, and signed a declaration that everything had been found in good order at Auschwitz, but after signing, the four Jews, quote, expressed a desire to see the camp of Birkenau and particularly the crematoria, about which they had heard some stories. The commission was then taken to Birkenau and immediately to crematorium number 1. Here they were shot from behind. A telegram was supposedly sent to Holland reporting that after leaving Auschwitz, the four men had been victims of an unfortunate automobile accident, unquote, part 1, 38. 16. The area around Auschwitz, within a radius of 100 kilometers, had been evacuated, and the buildings not to be taken over by the camp were to be demolished, part 2, 6. 17. Description of the Auschwitz I hospital and its procedures. In the autumn of 1942, the hospital mortality rate was so high that Berlin requested an explanation. An investigation uncovered that the camp doctor had been administering lethal injections to weak and sick people, certain prisoners condemned to death, and some teenagers considered to be orphans. For punishment, the camp doctor was simply sent to the same job at the Buna plant, probably meaning Monowitz. The SS continued to provide some services to the camp administered by Farben. Part 2, 8-10. 18. As a result of bad treatment, a Jew could not last more than 2 weeks, irrespective of his physical condition, part 2, 12. 19. In the summer of 1942, Jews were being gassed in the Birch Forest, Birkenwald, where Birkenau was located, in special sealed buildings giving the impression of showers. Because the crematories were not completed, the bodies were buried in mass graves, causing putrefaction. In the autumn of 1942, the four crematories were completed, and many bodies were exhumed and burned. This is the Polish major's account, contradicting that of the two young Slovakian Jews, who said that part of the new crematories were put into operation in February 1943, and that prior to that date, bodies were burned in trenches part 2, 16-17. 20. Details on how it was decided exactly when to execute somebody already condemned to death, part 2, 16-17. The foregoing is effectively illustrative of the contents of the WRB report. It is a mixture of truth, guesswork, and invention, the factual part of which could have been, and obviously was, put together on the basis of inside information available in 1944. The contradiction in the two accounts of extermination serves to enhance the credibility of the claim that these are unsolicited reports of escaped inmates, but it is not clear that such increased credibility was the motivation for composing the report thus. The first version, that large crematories were in operation at Birkenau in early 1943, and that mass cremations took place in trenches before that date, is the one subsequently put forward, and the correct one in regard to the date of availability of the crematories, but the second version of mass graves might have some truth in it also, because there had been a typhus epidemic in the summer, at a time when inadequate crematory facilities existed. Reitlinger uses the WRB report as a source. This is not entirely justified, but it is not entirely without justification either. One must assume that much of the material in the report is true. As will be elaborated below, there is no question of the competence of the authors of the report. However, one must be careful in this regard, obviously, and accept only that which seems corroborated by either common sense or independent evidence. Given the protagonistic and propagandistic role of the report, but recalling that a well-organized hoax necessarily contains much valid fact, this is perfectly reasonable. One can be rather specific about the routes by which information flowed out of the camps. In cases where there was significant industrial activity, the inmates inevitably came into contact with many people who were not camp inmates, company employees, railroad employees, etc., and these contacts were the basis for an extensive system of clandestine channels of communication. Auschwitz, of course, furnished numerous and excellent opportunities for such contacts, and on account of the communist organization, there were very effective channels to outside underground centers, especially in nearby Krakow. Information about the camp, including, it is claimed, copies of orders received from Berlin or Oranienburg, flowed constantly out of Auschwitz. These channels were also used to send such things as money, medicine and forged papers into the camp. In addition, as discussed in another connection on page 156, the communists in all of the camps were highly organized for illegal radio listening. If they had receivers, they no doubt also had transmitters. There has been witness testimony to possession of radio transmitters by camp inmates, and Reitlinger believes that Auschwitz inmates had transmitters. In order to grasp completely the nature of the information and propaganda channels that existed, one should take special note of the War Refugee Board and the OSS. The WRB maintained constant contact with events in Hungary, even after the German occupation in March 1944. For example, it had its agent, Raoul Wallenberg, in the Swedish diplomatic corps, and there were other links through Jewish organizations. Jewish leaders in Budapest were in constant contact with those in Slovakia, and the Slovakian Jewish leadership was in contact with Polish Jewry, particularly in Krakow. Possibly more important than the WRB, although its role in the hoax is not nearly as obvious, was the Office of Strategic Services, OSS, the predecessor of the CIA. The OSS was set up early in World War II under the leadership of General William Donovan. Its mission was intelligence of a political nature and related matters, for example sabotage, propaganda, guerrilla warfare, as distinct from the more conventional forms of military intelligence, to which its operations were related somewhat, as the operations of the German SD were related to those of the Abwehr, although high-placed Washington observers complained that the OSS seemed to enjoy unlimited funds, and knew no bounds on its authority. With only a few exceptions, the OSS was not staffed by military people but by persons recruited from private life. Thus, it included many political types, ranging from communists to émigré monarchists. On account of their organization, the communists were naturally a significant force in the OSS, irrespective of their numbers. The OSS was deeply involved with propaganda. The OWI, Office of War Information, the most prominent U.S. wartime propaganda agency, had been the propaganda division of the Office of the Coordinator of Information, Donovan, when it split off from the OSS in 1942, and the remainder of Donovan's organization was renamed the OSS. Despite this separation, the OSS remained active in the propaganda field, and when the Anglo-American PWB, Psychological Warfare Branch, was set up in Eisenhower's headquarters, it drew its American personnel from both the OWI and the OSS. Another propaganda operation of the OSS, one which employed a large number of quote-unquote progressive writers, was the MO, Morale Operations Branch. The mission of MO was black propaganda, meaning MO specialized in manufacturing propaganda presented in such a way that it would appear to have come from within the ranks of the enemy. MO thus distributed forged newspapers and military orders among enemy personnel, operated clandestine transmitters that purported to be broadcasting from within enemy territory, and started rumors in the Axis and Axis-occupied countries. Its staff included, quote, liberals and communists alike, all dedicated to the idealist interpretation of the fight against fascism, unquote. A particularly relevant facet of the OSS operations was that they had enlisted the cooperation of the Jewish Agency in Palestine, which was really the unofficial Israeli government of the time. The Jewish Agency, on account of extensive and elaborate contacts with Jews in Europe, especially in the Balkans, was able to undertake many important missions for the OSS. Thus, the channels to Jews in Hungary, Slovakia and beyond were open. Finally, it is of interest that the OSS was very significant on the prosecution staff at the IMT trial, especially in the early stages. The point to be made in this discussion of the WRB report is certainly not that it was invented in the OSS or the WRB. I do not know the identity of the authors, and do not believe that the question is of great significance. The main point is that two quote-unquote internationals, the communist and the Zionist, played important roles in the intelligence, propaganda, and refugee assistance programs of the U.S. The WRB, effectively taking its orders from Harry Dexter White, Henry Morgenthau Jr., the World Jewish Congress, and other Zionists, and the OSS, with its staff of communists and its Jewish agency allies, show that the situation was perfectly suitable for the manufacture of a Jewish extermination propaganda lie, built about Auschwitz, which, as a precaution, contained enough real facts to suggest to the unreflective that the allegations were true. The interior of the Auschwitz camp was not, by any exercise of the imagination, isolated from the Allies. The world's most efficient intelligence organization, the Communist Party, could transmit any information desired to any destination whatever, and the situation was such, that the ubiquitous Zionist International was in a position to manufacture and transmit whatever items seemed appropriate for the occasion. Even if the contents of the WRB report were entirely true, an escape by inmates would not have been at all necessary to get the quote-unquote facts into the hands of the Allies. Note that we are told that the entire contents of the WRB report are due to three independent escapes by remarkably informed inmates. In view of what we know about the channels of communication that existed, this is silly in the extreme. The authors of the WRB report remained anonymous for quite a bit more than the time being. The report became a prosecution document at Nuremberg under the number 022L. The descriptive material accompanying the document, dated August 7, 1945, the staff evidence analysis, seems distressed at the anonymity of the authors. It tells of a certain Dr. Joseph Elias, quote, Protestant pastor of Jewish ancestry, organizer of Jewish resistance in Hungary, head of Jobbischer bei Zotzag, who interrogated the first two Slovak Jews after their escape, unquote. Then it tells of, quote, Dr. G. Seuss, secretary of Hungarian Underground Movement MFM, who brought the first report of the first two Slovak Jews to Italy, unquote. The organization Joe Poster was real, but of the activities of Elias or Suze in connection with these matters, nothing, it seems, is known. Of the origins of the parts of the report attributed to the other three people, we are told nothing. It is said that R. D. McClelland, Bern representative of the WRB, forwarded the report to Washington in early July 1944. The supplemental part was presumably not included. The WRB report was put into evidence at the IMT as document 022L by Major Walsh on December 14, 1945. There was no defense objection, at the IMT, to the acceptance of the report into evidence. At the Farben trial, the prosecution submitted the report, document book 89, as evidence, but the defense objected, and this objection, quote, as to the competence and materiality of each and every document in the book, unquote, was sustained by that court. The result of the ensuing legal argument was that the court agreed to taking a certain very ambiguous judicial notice of the documents. Anonymity was maintained for several more years, because the first edition, 1953, of Reitlinger's The Final Solution considers the authors anonymous. In considering the beginnings of the gassings, reference is made to, quote, the very reliable report of the Birkenau Infirmary Registrar or Blockschreiber, who escaped to Hungary in April 1944, unquote, page 110. In connection with information about Theresienstadt Jews transported to Auschwitz, quote, we are indebted to a Slovak Jewish doctor, who escaped to Hungary in April 1944. This man, who was in charge of the Birkenau Infirmary records, unquote, pages 169 to 170. In discussing the WRB report, Reitlinger told us that, quote, the most important document is that of the anonymous Slovak Jewish doctor who escaped to Hungary in April 1944, unquote, page 540. In all three cases, Reitlinger was referring to the author of the first section of the WRB report, who, the report says, was the Slovakian Jew who arrived on April 13, 1942, and was given a registration number around 29,000. Reitlinger refers to him as a doctor, but the report actually does not make it clear what he was. It appears that he was supposed to be an intellectual or a clerk. The next development seems to have been the publication in 1956 in Israel of the book, Im Schatten des Todes, by J. Oscar Neumann. Neumann had been one of the leaders of the various Jewish councils and resistance organizations in Slovakia. In his account, Rabbi Michael Dov Burweismandl, originally a Hungarian Jew resident in a part of Hungary that was annexed by Czechoslovakia after World War I, was the leader of Jewish resistance in Slovakia. In Neumann's story, the two young Slovakian Jews appear on schedule in Slovakia, as does the Polish major. Actually, the WRB report does not say where the Polish major escaped to. Neumann gives the impression that he actually met these people, quote, yet here sit eyewitnesses, who have told the whole truth, unquote. His account does not mention the two authors of the third, supplementary section of the WRB report, and he does not tell us the names or tattooed registration numbers of the escapees. Since they were in great danger of being found by the Gestapo, which was looking for them, they, quote, were sent to an outlying mountainous area to rest, unquote. Rabbi Weissmandl communicated the report to Budapest, Switzerland, and other destinations, in order to warn other Jews and to bring help. Weissmandl emigrated to the United States after the war, and set up an Orthodox Talmudic seminary in New York State. He died in November 1957. However, his war memoirs were published posthumously in 1960, unfortunately in Hebrew, which I am not able to read. The WRB report is a major subject of his book. I have assumed that his story is essentially similar to Neumann's, because the two authors were similarly situated and had the same connections. However, I could be wrong.